Hey, welcome to the Growth Dummies Summary for The Lean Startup by Eric Ries. The Lean Startup shows how to achieve business success by learning what customers want fast. Eric Ries explains how to launch a minimum viable product, why you should ignore your vanity metrics, and how to use split testing to avoid wasting years of your life building a product nobody wants. Our top quote from this book is, "Lean thinking defines value as providing benefit to the customer. Anything else is waste," end quote. So who is Eric Ries and why listen to him? Eric Ries co-founded the company IMVU. That was a startup which lets you chat with people all over the world using your own custom 3D avatar. Does that sound like a weird idea? Well, it was. Nobody had ever done anything like that before successfully. And maybe that's why the business really struggled in the beginning. They couldn't attract any users or make a profit. But then Ries changed his approach to growing the startup, and everything changed for them. Soon, IMVU was signing up tens of millions of users, and they achieved annual revenues of over $50 million. After this, Ries started advising other exciting tech startups and consulting with large companies like Intuit, that's a tax software company, who wanted to know how to grow a business rapidly and innovate. But Eric Ries was definitely not born being a business wizard. In fact, the first two startups he was involved with failed spectacularly. It wasn't until he found a whole new process for growing a startup that he could achieve his significant success. And then he began writing his lessons for starting a successful startup business on a blog. This blog became very popular within the tech startup community, and that was at startuplessonslearned.com. Eventually, he compiled the best of those lessons into this book called The Lean Startup. And today, this is probably the most recommended book for anyone wanting to launch their own startup. Best of all, right here, right now, you're going to listen to a fast and fun overview of this book. I've pulled out some real gems to share with you. And of course, if you enjoy this, then you'll love the book itself, which gives many more details and examples. Anyway, let's jump into lesson one, which is find out what customers want as soon as possible. Here's a quote from the book. "A startup is a human institution designed to create a new product or service under conditions of extreme uncertainty," end quote. Most startups fail. That's the uncomfortable truth. That obviously goes against the romantic myth of entrepreneurship that is so common in our culture. We've all heard this story before. There's a few college kids, and they build the next earth-shattering company in their garage with just a couple computers and pepperoni pizzas. They persevere and become billionaires because they had just the right idea and pure passion. Well, that's a bunch of, you know what. Eric Ries started out, he had the smarts, he had the ambition, and he graduated from Princeton. Yet, in spite of all that, his first two startups failed embarrassingly. Back then, he believed they failed because the engineering wasn't perfect enough. But now he knows the truth, which is that startups usually fail not because of poor technical execution, but because they built something nobody wanted. That is a problem all too common with startups, teams building products through blind guesswork, hoping that customers might like it in the future. And the solution to that problem is the Lean Startup, which is really a process to help you find out what customers really want in the least amount of time possible through small experiments. Eric Ries says that regular business plans are like launching a rocket ship. Everything is planned out in careful detail, years in advance. However, in the unstable environment that most startups face, that kind of plan does not work at all. Maybe that's why so many new startups crash and burn. The process that Eric Ries teaches in this book is more like driving a car. Sure, you do start out with a clear direction, but you can always easily turn left or right at any moment when you see obstacles. In a startup, Speed is important because you only have limited time until you run out of money. And this is true whether you're launching a small business with your own cash or depending on investors. By the way, Eric Ries says that a lot of this book is heavily inspired by a guy called Steve Blank, who's a serial entrepreneur and professor who created a customer development process for startups. In fact, Steve Blank was an early investor in IMVU, and he insisted that Eric Ries and his team attend the course that he taught at UC Berkeley about entrepreneurship. And then Ries was so inspired by the course that he then carried a dog-eared copy of Steve Blank's book, which is called The Four Steps to the Epiphany, everywhere with him while building IMVU. Again, that book was called The Four Steps to the Epiphany. So a summary of this lesson is most startups fail, unlike what the Hollywood movies often show. Eric Ries's first two startups failed, and he now knows it was because they built something nobody wanted. The lean startup is a process to avoid that happening to you by showing a process you can follow to learn what customers really want through experiments in the least time possible. And now lesson two. Eliminate waste and produce real value through validated learning. Here's a quote. Lean thinking defines value as providing benefit to the customer. Anything else is waste. End quote. So lean manufacturing was a method pioneered by Toyota in the 1990s to minimize waste in their factories. This was the secret that made Toyota go from being a small company to becoming the largest car manufacturer in the world by 2008. Eric Ries believes that just as lean manufacturing revolutionized blue-collar work, his lean startup methods could revolutionize white-collar work, especially for new fast-growing companies. You see, in the 1990s, Japanese car makers found it difficult to compete. The big American car makers were taking advantage of mass production techniques to make their cars more cheaply. But the Japanese companies like Toyota were far too small to use those methods, so they decided to try something totally different, which is now called lean manufacturing. Lean manufacturing minimizes waste in factories. It helps employees waste less effort during work, and it also helps the company waste less money by not stockpiling lots of extra inventory. When you first hear some of these lean manufacturing methods, they may sound a little crazy. For example, Toyota factories famously had what was called an Andon cord. And this was basically a rope any employee in the factory could pull if they saw a defect. And when that rope was pulled, all production in the factory stopped so everybody could focus on fixing the root cause of that one defect. Now, a lot of us, most people, I think, would assume this cord is a bad idea. I mean, if anybody can pull it when there's any little problem, then that would ruin their productivity, right? Well, as it turns out, this Andon cord was a great idea. Why? Because fixing problems in the production line as they are found actually increases productivity in the long run. Every time there is a defect, Toyota wastes time and money because they have to then go back and fix the car or throw it out altogether. By stopping everything to fix the root causes of any defects right away, they eventually get a lot fewer future defects. And as a result, the company becomes a lot more productive and efficient. They don't always have to keep going back and fixing those defects. And as a side effect, methods like this earned Toyota an enviable reputation for quality. So, lean manufacturing aims to minimize waste in factories. And Eric Ries says the lean startup aims to minimize waste in startups. And waste in a startup is delivering a product or features that nobody wants. For instance, if your employee works many weeks programming some new feature, then they may feel they are being very productive during that time. But what if none of your customers actually want or will use that feature? Well, then in reality, all those programming hours were wasted. In startups, this kind of wasteful productivity is the norm. Eric Ries says the solution to this kind of waste is called validated learning. Validated learning is a process to measure the value and quality of your product from the perspective of your customers. And we'll talk a lot about how to practically do this in the next few lessons. Now, the word learning often has a bad reputation in the business world because it's often used as an excuse when there's lack of success. However, with validated learning, you will be measuring the impact of every new product change with hard numbers. So you'll actually measure it with experiments, tests, and metrics. And this means learning is a goal that we begin with at the planning stage, not just a story or excuse told after the fact. So when validated learning is the goal, then individual productivity of your employees is much less important. Eric Ries generally recommends startup employees work in small cross-functional teams. That's very different than the usual corporate structure that divides people into functional departments like sales, engineering, and so on. However, you'll need to set your team members' expectations in advance by letting them know this new approach may feel less productive than before. But as Peter Drucker said, there's nothing quite so useless as doing with great efficiency something that should not be done at all. This is really a new way of managing people, because even tech startups are ultimately groups of humans. A new management approach is needed because startups face a unique situation of extreme uncertainty. In a startup, your first goal is to find out what is valued from the eyes of your customer. In other words, your first job is to figure out what your job is. Summary of this lesson. Toyota became the largest car maker in the world through lean manufacturing, a process that minimizes waste in factories. Similarly, the lean startup minimizes waste in startups by helping you learn what customers want, really want, through experiments, tests, and metrics. And now lesson three, launch a minimum viable product as soon as possible. Here's another quote. As you consider building your own minimum viable product, let this simple rule suffice. Remove any feature, process, or effort that does not contribute directly to the learning you seek. End quote. Eric Ries says you should try to launch a basic version of your product before you think you're ready, and this is often called a minimum viable product, or MVP for short. This is so important because startups that wait until their product is finished before opening it to the public, they often find out they've spent months or years creating something nobody wanted. That's exactly what happened in Eric Ries's early startups, and he was determined not to make that same mistake again with IMVU. So when IMVU launched to the public, it was full of bugs. The engineering team led by Ries actually felt a bit embarrassed to release it. However, that gave them extra motivation to improve the product quickly in response to customer feedback and metrics. So one bad lesson they learned quickly after launching the product was they had already wasted months working on some features that nobody wanted to use and nobody would ever use. For example, Ries himself had spent months integrating IMVU with the most popular instant messenger programs at the time. Why? Because he assumed people wouldn't want to sign up for a new app separately when older friends were elsewhere. However, when they started testing with real users, they saw that real people didn't care about those integrations. They actually wanted to use IMVU to meet new friends in a safe way. They didn't want to use it to chat with their existing friends, really. And this was a big shock to the team, and it caused them to dramatically change their plans for upcoming features when they found this out. On the other hand, the early IMVU customers loved a stupidly simple teleporting feature. They actually called it better than the competition's more technically advanced features. But the reality was that the IMVU engineers had rushed that feature out at the last second, and they felt it was way too primitive. So they also learned that what customers value can be very different from what the company managers, engineers, or designers value. So a minimum viable product is very different than a prototype because it is actually for sale. The purpose of a minimum viable product is to begin the learning process. You see, the moment you have a product for sale, you can begin gathering those basic metrics that you need, like what percentage of your website visitors become customers. A minimum viable product can provide a much needed dose of reality, but this is also why so many entrepreneurs hesitate to release one. They don't want their ideas judged based on a half-finished rough product. So early on, IMVU bought $5 per day of Google Ads to bring some initial visitors to their website. That was more than enough for them to get some early metrics and begin the process of optimizing their product. When Tony Hsieh started his company Zappos, he began first with a small experiment. So first, he visited local retail shoe stores and he asked to take photos of their shoes. He told the store owners that he would put the shoes up for sale online, and if anybody ended up ordering a pair, he would come back to the store to fulfill the order. And that's exactly what he did. He was taking photos of these shoes himself and then fulfilling the shoe orders one by one at the full retail price. Obviously, he didn't make money from that, but the experiment validated his assumption that people do want to order shoes online. And this gave him the confidence to then invest in a proper website, to set up warehouses, hire employees, and so on. Eventually, Zappos grew, and it became so successful that Amazon bought the company for almost $1 billion. Summary of this lesson is, launch a basic first version of your product to the public, even when you don't think it's ready. A minimum viable product will allow you to start learning from your customers' feedback and metrics. This is essential information to help you build the kind of product people actually want to use. And now we have lesson four. Evaluate each new product change with scientific split tests. When most companies release a new version of their product, they really don't know which of the changes will be good or bad from the eyes of the customers. For example, when Microsoft used to sell a new version of Microsoft Word annually, each new version contained dozens, maybe hundreds of new features and big changes. And that annual model, that's called the waterfall model of software development. And the big downside to that is that customer feedback is only heard very late in the development process, when it's often too late to reverse some of these bad ideas or poorly designed features. Eric Ries says that a far better approach to product development is to release new features and changes individually and split test each one, like each new feature, individually to measure its impact. So first of all, what is split testing? Well, split testing began as a direct marketing technique. You see, advertisers wanted to find out what kinds of ads were most effective. So one smart copywriter had the idea to run some scientific tests between different ads. So for example, maybe they would send out two different versions of a flyer. Half the flyers had headline A and half the flyers had headline B. Otherwise, they were identical. And then they measured which of these headlines brought in more sales. How? Well, maybe they would put little codes into the coupons at the bottom of each flyer. So, and when people sent in the coupons, the advertisers could then see which headline was connected to that coupon, and they could count how many sales came from each version of the flyer. This was really a genius new development because it allowed marketers to scientifically test which advertisements were most effective for the first time ever. This technique later became known as split testing or A-B testing. Today, with the internet, split testing is faster and simpler than ever before. And by the way, there's a great classic book written by one of the inventors of split testing, and it's called Scientific Advertising by Claude Hopkins. That is really short, and it can show you how to sell with words more effectively. It's written decades ago, but the lessons inside are timeless. That was Scientific Advertising by Claude Hopkins. So Eric Ries didn't want to spend a year working blindly on 100 new features, only to find out that half their work was wasted. So he tried this new product development approach based on split testing. And that means changes or any new feature in the IMVU product were immediately released to small groups of users chosen at random by a computer. Technology then made it easy to measure the impact of the new feature on the user's actions in terms of the concrete numbers and metrics. So IMVU would release dozens of these new changes every day, and they used technology to measure if the change had any impact on the user behavior. For example, they could quickly see if a feature made users stay on their app longer or start more conversations, and if it did, they would know that that was a good feature. This quick feedback loop helped IMVU's engineers learn from their users directly and very quickly. If people didn't like a feature, the engineers might try to improve it, or if they couldn't, then they would throw it out. If people seemed to really like some new feature, then the engineers would plan to make more features that were similar to that in the future. And this is why Eric Ries says the Lean Startup is more like driving a car than launching a rocket. With a car, you can quickly change direction to a better road as you gain more information. Summary of this lesson is, at IMVU, they split tested every little new change in feature they made. This means they first released every new feature to a small group of random users and then measured to see how those users' behaviors changed. For example, did they stay longer using the app or start more conversations than usual? These metrics are invaluable for learning what your customers want. Now we have lesson 5. Focus on actionable metrics, not misleading vanity metrics. Vanity metrics are numbers which sound impressive on the surface, but often hide the truth about a business. Vanity metrics can easily mislead and cause overconfidence. At one point, IMVU's vanity metrics were increasing exponentially, like their total number of users was skyrocketing. On a graph, this growth looked like a hockey stick. But Eric Ries had enough experience to know that that wasn't necessarily a great situation. You see, IMVU was getting more users every day, but their product itself was no longer improving. And Eric Ries could only understand this when he looked at the deeper actionable metrics of the business. For example, he saw that only 1% of their free users were becoming paid users, and all of his team's hard work over the past several months had not improved this metric even a little. It was stuck at 1%. Now, this situation is dangerous because without constant product improvement, their growth could easily crash. At that time, most of their users were enthusiastic early adopters. And early adopters are the people who jump on any new technology because they're excited about it. But that is really a very small percentage of people, and Ries knew that would dry up eventually. He knew if IMVU wanted to expand from early adopters to mainstream users, they would have to improve their product. And that meant focusing on those deeper actionable metrics that revealed the truth about how users interacted with their product. Okay, so I hope you're still with me. Basically, actionable metrics are very important. Now, how can you find these actionable metrics in your own business? Well, cohort analysis is one of the best tools for finding and measuring actionable metrics. What's that? In a nutshell, cohort analysis splits your users into groups or cohorts based on their actions. So it lets you measure how different groups of users behave within your product. For example, in IMVU, Ries split his users into 5 cohorts. First one, people who had registered. Second, people who had logged in at least one time. Third, people who had one conversation. Fourth, people who had 5 conversations. And fifth, people who became paying customers. So as you can see, each of these groups describe different behaviors. And by putting this on a graph, Ries could immediately see how users were behaving in the product itself. More importantly, he could see whether the new product features that they were releasing all the time, were those features leading to more engagement and sales or not? And those are both very important actionable metrics. And since those actionable metrics inside IMVU were showing no improvement, the product development team then became very, very open to user feedback. They wanted to know why the product was not becoming better at converting users into customers, despite months of their hard work. By focusing on those actionable metrics, The IMVU team then started making real improvements to the product, and Reese says this was the key step that set them on the path to making tens of millions in revenue in just a year or two in the future, focusing on those actionable metrics. So, summary of this lesson: vanity metrics can sound impressive to outsiders, but they often hide the truth about a business. For example, a company can make $1 billion in sales but still go bankrupt because they had no profit. On the other hand, actionable metrics measure how users behave within your product, and these are critical to success. For example, measuring what percentage of your free users become paid users and working to improve this percentage. And now we have lesson 6. Grow your startup through viral spread, paid advertising, or repeat customers. If you want to grow a profitable business, then this next part should be very exciting to you, because now we'll be talking about the 3 growth engines that Reese says drive sustainable growth in pretty much every successful startup. So the first way to grow is through viral spread. Viral spread is when your users introduce your product to new people one by one. This can include word of mouth. People love sharing cool things with friends. Facebook exploded in popularity through word of mouth, first on college campuses, then high schools, then everywhere else. Another form of viral spread is a referral program. When PayPal launched, they gave $20 for referring a friend, and this brought them a lot of users very quickly. And another way is exposure as a side effect of using the product. This is viral spread when your customers use your product publicly, and they almost accidentally spread the word. For example, about 20 years ago, the email service provider Hotmail wasn't very popular until they added a link to the bottom of every email that said, "Get your free email account at Hotmail." That means every time a Hotmail user sent an email, they were advertising Hotmail to all their friends and contacts. A year and a half after this, Hotmail had jumped to 12 million users, and Microsoft bought them for $400 million. Okay, so there's actually a number called the viral coefficient that measures how viral or contagious a product is. For example, a viral coefficient of 2 would mean that every user tells 2 of their friends about your product. So if you're relying on this kind of viral spread for your growth, then you want this viral coefficient number to be as high as possible. And by the way, if you want to learn how to make your social media content more viral, then a very useful book for that is called Contagious by Jonah Berger, and for which we have a summary too. In that book, Jonah Berger breaks down 6 principles based in science that make people more likely to share your posts. Okay, now back to the lean startup. The second way to grow is through paid advertising. Many businesses grow by paying for advertising, which attracts new customers. We all know that. The most important part of this is making sure that you're paying less for each new customer than the profit they'll bring you. I hope that makes sense. I mean, you don't want to spend $100 in advertising and then only make $50 in sales. In technical terms, business people would say that your LTV, which is your customer lifetime value, must be lower than your CPA, which is cost per acquisition. Eric Rees says IMVU grew because they figured out how to make money from a group of customers that were very cheap to advertise to online, including teenagers, broke people, and those outside first world countries. Advertising to those groups was very cheap because other companies couldn't make money from them. As a side note, one of my favorite marketing teachers called Dan Kennedy has a strategy that flips this around. Dan Kennedy often says that the best competitive advantage your business can have is being able to pay more than anyone else to acquire a customer. And I'm paraphrasing that. What that means is if your business can make a very high profit per customer, then you'll be able to afford most types of advertising easily, right? So that means it'll be easy to get customers if you can afford to advertise almost anywhere, right? Many businesses are always looking for the cheapest source of traffic, but this strategy totally flips that around. First, try to maximize the profit per customer, and then it's easy to afford advertising in a lot of places. Okay, so the third way to grow is through repeat customers. This is about holding on to your existing customers longer. Paid subscriptions are ideal for this because your customers pay automatically each month, so your revenue will continue to grow as long as not too many people cancel the subscription, and as long as you're getting some new customers every month. Churn rate is the technical term for what percentage of your customers cancel every month in a subscription. So your goal here should be to reduce your churn rate. Here's an example. Adobe multiplied their gross profits by switching to a subscription business model. And that's the software company that makes Photoshop, Lightroom, and a lot of professional software. They went from $3 billion in 2013 to $9 billion in 2019, and that's gross profits. How? Well, for a long time, they'd always charged a one-time payment of hundreds of dollars for their software, but then they started charging $10 to $50 per month, and now they are far more successful. There is obviously a lot more subscription services like Netflix, Disney, and Spotify that are doing really well. So those are the three growth engines. Pretty exciting, right? Now, always remember that the growth engine you choose will determine what numbers you need to focus on in your business. Those are your actionable metrics. For example, if you want to grow your business through viral spread, then get that viral coefficient number as high as possible. If you're paying for paid advertising, then look at your customer lifetime value and cost per acquisition numbers. And if you are making money with repeat customers, then decrease that churn rate. Summary of this lesson: every successful startup has grown in one of three ways. First is through viral spread, like word of mouth or customer referrals. Second is through paid advertising, where you just have to make sure you're making more money than what you're spending for the advertising. Third is through customers buying from you repeatedly, like paid subscriptions. The growth engine you choose will determine what metrics you need to focus on optimizing. And now we have lesson 7. Pivot to a new business strategy when your actionable metrics stop improving. Here's a quote. What differentiates the success stories from the failures is that the successful entrepreneurs who had the foresight, the ability, and the tools to discover which parts of their plans were working brilliantly and which were misguided and adapt their strategies accordingly. End quote. Startups often need to pivot. Pivoting means keeping your team the same and usually your product the same, but trying a different business strategy. In basketball, a pivot is when a player keeps one foot stuck to the ground, but they can rotate the rest of their body to face any direction they want. I think that's a good way to visualize a pivot. There are many ways a business can pivot, including finding new groups of customers for your existing product. For example, trying to sell your patient scheduling program to dentists instead of doctors. You can also pivot by sticking with your current group of customers and just building a totally new product for them. This can happen when you learn a lot about a certain group of customers during the course of creating your first unsuccessful product. You can pivot by focusing on one killer feature of your product and throwing out the rest. A great example of this is Basecamp.com. That's a software company that stopped working on several of their smaller apps so they could focus totally on their one best product. You can also pivot by using a different sales channel, like switching from selling to consumers to selling to businesses with an enterprise product. So one company that has a fantastic story of successfully pivoting is Nike. This is a personal favorite of mine. So Phil Knight started out being just the U.S. distributor for a Japanese shoe company called Onitsuka Tiger. He sold their shoes in America for them, and he was very successful at it. But one day, the Japanese company said they were switching to a new distributor in America, and that meant Phil had lots of employees, lots of stores, lots of expenses, but no shoes to sell. That was a big problem, to say the least. In a rush, Phil started his own brand that would later be called Nike. He ordered several thousand pairs of custom shoes from an overseas factory. And in just a few weeks, he pivoted from being a shoe distributor to selling his own brand of shoes. And we all know how that story turns out. If you want to listen to that, the whole inspirational story behind Nike, or at least a short version of it, then go listen to our summary of the book Shoe Dog by Phil Knight. I highly, highly recommend that book to any aspiring entrepreneur. So when should you pivot your business? Well, Eric Ries says when your actionable metrics are not improving, no matter what you try, then you probably need to pivot. And then if your actionable metrics begin improving again after the pivot, then that's a good sign that you've made a successful pivot. So summary of this lesson, a pivot means you keep the same team and often the same product, but change your business strategy. For example, maybe you try to market your product to a new group of customers or you try a different sales channel. You must pivot when your actionable metrics are no longer improving despite your best efforts. Okay, so that's all for this look at the Lean Startup. Lots of fascinating ideas in this book. Next, I would recommend you look at our notes for the book, The 22 Immutable Laws of Marketing. If you're interested in creating a business and a business strategy that makes you stand out from everyone else, then that book is invaluable.